somewhere in your firm's paperwork, there's a page that says who owns your clients. Most advisors have never read it. Today, I want to walk through the W-2 versus 1099 question, because it gets filed as a tax question. And what it actually decides is whether the book you've spent a career building belongs to you or to the firm. Quick note before we get into it. Advisor Growth Lab is not a broker-dealer, and everything here is for educational purposes only. It's not individualized legal, tax, or investment advice. Every advisor's situation is different, so treat this as a map, not a set of directions. This one's for any advisor who's ever looked at a recruiter's email and wondered which side of the employee line they're really on. By the end, you'll know what the two classifications mean in practice, how the money and taxes change, who owns the relationships under each model, and what each one lets you take with you on the day you leave. Start with what the labels mean, because the words hide the stakes. W-2 and 1099 are IRS classifications, but for an advisor, they mark the line between employee and owner. A W-2 advisor is an employee. The firm pays you, withholds your taxes, provides the office, the technology, the brand, and the compliance umbrella. And in exchange, it directs a great deal of how you operate. A 1099 advisor is an independent contractor, and legally, you are running your own business. Which one you are mostly comes down to channel. The big national brokerages, the banks, most insurance-owned firms, those advisors are W-2 employees. Advisors affiliated with an independent broker-dealer are typically 1099, and a registered investment advisor, an RIA, can sit on either side. An RIA can hire W-2 advisors onto its payroll, and the advisor who owns the RIA owns the enterprise itself. One caution before we go further. The classification is a strong signal of who owns what, but it is only a signal. The controlling documents are your agreements, and every answer in this episode ends the same way. Read yours. Now the money, because the mechanics change on day one. A W-2 paycheck arrives with the taxes already taken out, and the firm pays the employer's share of Social Security and Medicare behind the scenes. You see a net number, and the machinery that produced it belongs to the firm. A 1099 advisor gets paid gross. Nothing is withheld. You make estimated payments through the year, and because you're self-employed, you cover both halves of employment taxes, the employer's portion, and the employees. At the same time, you're now running a business, which changes what counts as a deductible expense and opens entity and retirement plan decisions an employee never touches. Does all that net out better or worse for you? That depends entirely on your numbers, your state, and how the practice is structured, which is why the tax side belongs on your build the team list. Most advisors don't have a CPA who actually works with advisors in their corner. Get one before a move, not after, and let them run your specifics. Which brings us to the part that outlasts every tax season. Who owns the book on the independent side? The answer is generally, yes, you do. The 1099 arrangement is usually structured so the advisor owns the practice and the client relationships. That's much of the reason the model exists. Affiliation agreements still vary, and some carry transfer or non-solicitation terms that surprise people. So owning it on paper is the norm. Confirm it in your paper. The employee side is where advisors get surprised, and many find out late. In the traditional W-2 model, the firm often takes the contractual position that the client relationships belong to the firm, not to you. You found the clients, you serve them, you take the call when the market drops and somebody panics, and on the day you leave or retire, the firm's documents may say those relationships were never yours. Ownership is what you can grow, sell, or pass on. It's the difference between building a career and building an asset. And plenty of advisors spend decades assuming they have the second while their agreements describe the first. You can do excellent, fulfilling work under either model. Only one of them lets you own the thing you built. So what happens on the day you leave? Because advisors do leave, in numbers most people underestimate. Fidelity's advisor movement study found that more than half of advisors considered switching firms within a five-year window, and roughly one in four actually moved. And Diamond Consultants' annual transition report counted more than 11,000 experienced advisors changing firms in 2025, up about 16% from the year before. Movement is normal. What differs by model is what you can take with you. For a W-2 advisor at a brokerage, the framework that usually governs a move is the broker protocol, created back in 2004 by Smith Barney, Merrill Lynch, and UBS to protect clients' privacy and their freedom to choose their advisor. The official protocol text spells out exactly five pieces of client information a departing advisor may take for the clients they personally served: name, address, phone number, email address, and account title. Nothing else. No account numbers, no statements, no performance reports. And the protection has conditions. You resign in writing to local branch management. You leave the firm a copy of the client information you're taking. And both your old firm and your new firm have to be signatories. That last piece is where moves go sideways because membership shifts. Some of the biggest names joined early and then stepped back out around 2017 and 2018. If either firm is out, your employment agreement governs instead. And that usually means a non-solicitation clause and a much narrower path back to the clients you built. A 1099 advisor who owns the practice is playing a different game. There is no employer holding the relationships. So a move looks less like an employee resigning and more like a business changing vendors. You might change broker dealers or custodians while your clients simply stay yours. The transition still takes planning, but the fight over who gets to call the clients mostly isn't there, because that question got settled the day the practice was set up. One more point before I wrap up. Whichever model you're in, the document that decides all of this already exists, and it's sitting in your file. Most advisors have never closely read the ownership language in their own agreements, and it's the most important page in the building. Reading it properly is a job for a securities attorney. Most advisors don't have one on call, and that's the point. Get one in your corner to read your paper before you ever give notice, not after. If you're trying to figure out which side of this line your practice belongs on, we built a short assessment for exactly that. Six questions, free, on our website at advisorgrowthlab.com, and it routes you to a private conversation or the research that fits where you actually are. Nothing gets triggered. It's just a clear look at where you stand. Read the page before you need it. Clear eyes first, the move second. I'll see you tomorrow.